Okay, welcome to Fearless, Inspired, and Free. I am your host, Dana Wright, and I am back again, once again, with someone I've been really excited to talk to, wanting to hear a story, doing so much in the community, and everyone knows I love a public servant. So I'm excited. I have, I think we're going to learn a lot. I think we're going to also see some great lessons that we can pick up and we can use in areas of service for ourselves. My guest today is Mayor Katrina Thompson from the Village of Broadview. And if you ever have gone to Broadview, you see the big, what is that, like a water? Is
The
that the
water tower.
Yes, the water. So Broadview Strong is the hashtag that they use quite a bit there for their events. And, if you follow the mayor and her post, so just a spirit of collaboration and strength in a small town that I hold dear. I grew up in the village of Broadview. It's my most primary memories of parades and community and neighbors that we all took care of one another. And I feel like Mayor Thompson is bringing that feeling back to Broadview and really building strong community. So I'm gonna go over a few things that I saw when I was trying to learn more before I get to hear it straight from the mayor. She came in as the first African American female mayor of the Village of Broadview. That is, I mean, to still be having first, but I love someone who blazes a trail, and now she has set the bar. And she was first elected in 2017 in a five-person race, came out of that ahead, and in her next term, she got an overwhelming majority of the votes. And she was elected again in 2021. When she first came on, and I think it holds true today, she wanted to work collaboratively with the pillars of the community, library, park district, school, and local business. She embraces the power of partnership and alliance building, and she promotes and creates unity. I also felt that given today and the lack or the growing need to increase resources naturally, she is building strong and safe neighborhoods and a greener Broadview. So I am really, really excited to hear your story, Mayor. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Dana, and I'm excited to be a part of the conversation. So what I was thinking about is fearless, inspired, and free.
Yes.
And that just resonate with me so much because especially free. I'm just free of a lot of things, a lot of entities, a lot of people. And I don't have fear. I'm not afraid to have the courage to speak up and be a voice for what's right. And how we look at, treating people. It's all the work that we do every day is about humanity. And so that inspires me that I'm able to work in a fearless capacity, but I'm free in decisions that I have to make. And I'm not saying I'm a perfect person because I'm not, but I'm not in bondage.
I love that. I absolutely
I
love it
love
because
that.
I get that question a lot. And they're like, you can't be without fear. And I'm like, no, but you can fear less and you can free yourself. And I love your explanation for that and that you're a voice unapologetically is what I'm hearing. And when it's right, it's right. You're going to speak up for it. You're going to move for it. And we see it in your work. So we're certainly going to get into your work, but what is it that brought you to this space and time? I know that you were always in service even before this because you were the previous executive director of the West Humboldt Park Development Council. And then you were on the library board as well in the town. So, but what is it in your life that kind of draws you to this life of service outside of the fact that you're free and you have a voice and you want to use it for good?
So I think for me, growing up, I'm a transplant. So I'm born and raised in Inglewood, California, single parent home. My mother had me when she was 16, had her second child by the time she was 20, and we lived in, we didn't have a lot. We were poor, because she was a single teenage mom and, wanted to do things her way. I mean, thank God for grandparents. My grandparents were very active in our lives and showed us a lot of ways to not create some of the mistakes that have been created in the lineage that we come from. And so I take pride in where I come from, how I was raised, the community that I grew up in, how they looked out for us. And then as I go on to high school and then college, and I just one day woke up and said, I want to do something different. It's just like growing up in a neighborhood that you don't feel inspired. So the only way to do that is to take a risk. So I packed up my car, put my car on a truck, and I moved to Chicago with $300 and said if it didn't work out in 30 days, I was going back to California.
So you actually did the opposite. You hear so many stories where people pack up and they head to California, and you said, you know what? I'm packing up. I'm leaving California and I'm going to Chicago. I love it. And how brave you had to have been. And I think that a common theme with some of the women I talk to on the podcast is either they were a young single parent, or their mothers were young single parents. They had this influence with their grandmother. I really think that women, being strong, making sure they raise their children, getting that extra that we all know and love from a grandparent just gives us the strength sometimes. What gave you that strength and that just that I'm packing up? Like, well, we talked about fearless. So you were fearless in that moment for sure. But how did you, I mean, what was your mindset with that?
So when I came home from college and I stayed with my grandparents and my mother had already moved here. So she had been here like 5 years. And one day I just got tired of being tired. Like it was the same old people doing the same thing. And I just knew God had something different for me. But I didn't know what the different was, but I felt it. And I just called. I was like, what do you think about me moving to Chicago? And she said, yeah, you can move. And about 10 days later, I bought a one-way airplane. I had about $1,600 in my bank account. I paid about $1,000 to have my car shipped here. And I had $300 and didn't even know how I was going to pay my car note. But I said, if I didn't get a job in 30 days, then I would go back home. And I moved here October 17th, 1995. I started my first corporate job November 17th, 1995, and my life has changed ever since. Like literally changed ever since. And so, I heard stories back then. There's been people that's been here for years that can't get gainful employment and stuff like that. But I was on a mission to like I wanted it to work. And I'm not saying over that time period, over that time, I didn't have any children, at that time when I moved here. I was an adult. I was 25 when I moved here. But just taking a risk, and then I stayed with my parents, and I was so used to living with my grandmother that I had flexibility, and it was just the rules that when you go the way to school and you don't have rules, it's kind of hard to conform back to that type. So I moved from my mother's place in 6 months later. I got me an apartment, and I've been on my own ever since. But I take credit for a lot of the strength that my mother had, because she come from parents that were very capable, made sure she was provided for, but she decided to do something different. She came to California at the age of 13. She's in the school system, and then she meet my dad, and then just being, I guess, a young girl that that was very impressionable coming from the South. So she saw something, a city life. My dad is from LA. So she saw something different and that was exciting. And but they didn't stay together. And so I think a lot of my service component is a twofold, because one thing about my mother, she always showed us love and kindness, even when we didn't have. She always showed love and kindness. Where on my dad's side, he was more a servant, like he served families in the projects to make sure kids had Christmas, they had food to eat. He was always doing like food drives. And as I reflected on all of those things, I was like, that's probably where I get a lot of those qualities from, because I don't even think about, I just do it. So I think I got qualities from both parents, but The wisdom, the strength, and the courage that my mother had was she participated in all of our school activities. She went to all parent-teacher conferences until I graduated from high school. When I decided to do college tours, we couldn't afford for her to go, but she made sure that I was able to get on a bus, a Greyhound bus, to go to the college to do the college tours. So she sacrificed a lot, to make sure that we didn't make the same mistakes that she had made early on in her early adult life.
Got
So
it. I'm sorry.
I think it's just, just the makeup of who my parents are. My grandfather was a very strictler on education. So he made sure when we were small kids, we went to the library every day except Sunday.
So reading was important, and
Oh
reading
my God.
takes you on some amazing journeys. But what I'm hearing is that, and I'm gonna grab my cord here, what I'm hearing is that there are some components here that kind of formulated your early, like the impressions that you had just early, and that is, you had a woman and your mother who showed you love, kindness, support, and sacrifice. And then you had a father who, it sounds like, selfless. You know, he's here, he's making it happen for people to eat, he's making it happen for holidays. And those are all the ingredients of, a public servant. And you had a long time to kind of witness that and then put it into action in your adult life. And especially because it sounds like you always had this innate voice, telling you there's more, there's more, there's more for you. And so your messaging early was that there's definitely more you can do, because one person can make a difference, and your parents did make a difference, So I just think that's amazing, because not everybody has that kind of support. And the fact that you got that, and then you can mirror that and give that to the community or someone else, I think is, very, very noble.
Well, I don't want to make it seem like my dad was this stellar type of guy, right? He had there's three of us. I have a brother that's 6 months older than me, and then it's me, and then it's my sister. And one thing, as I reflected back on my life as it relates to him being a part of our life, was he never cared for us, but he cared for everybody else.
Interesting.
So he made sure that, other children's needs were being met, or, they was provided for, but he only had the three children that he never did nothing for. And then as we got older and started having conversations with him, and now he's deceased. And I think as adult children, we've learned to understand the why. He didn't know how to take care of a young family because he was young. But he knew that he had compassion about other people or those that lacked up, where his family, that side of the family, were a well-to-do family. And they didn't become into our lives until I was about 15 or 16. So now they play in this role. I participate in athletic sports, and now they want to, brag about the granddaughter that's, traveling to China to run and track and all of these things. And I'm like, but where were you when we didn't have a pair of shoes?
So you had some work to do. There was some work with that family dynamic.
Well, for me, it was just easy. The only person that I knew that I could rely on was my mother and my grandparents.
Yes.
But we did have a other side of us that, we knew about, we were aware of, but at the time, they wanted to embrace us. By this time, you're a teenager, so you've seen some things. And my mother never talked bad about them, ever. Not to us.
Yeah.
So I like to be real clear in that conversation, because, the service part is, I know I get that from my dad's side of the family. I know it. My uncles are still like that. And I talk to them. So, it's not unwarranted, and it's not, I have to live in my truth.
I love
that's
that.
Part of the dynamics of me.
Yeah. I mean, so you're acknowledging the pieces that you got.
Yeah.
You're also acknowledging the truth of what made you the person, so you can accept those pieces, but there's still some things that, stand as truths in that situation.
Absolutely.
But it didn't deter you. That's for
Hmm.
sure. That didn't deter you. And I do have a couple friends that are predominantly raised with their mother and grandmother. And I've said this before, and I think I said it to Shanita in a previous conversations that some of the strong there you're some of the strongest women I know when you have that women's influence and that support there when there is that type of dynamic in the family. And so I'm just going to add you to that group of strong women that I have met or that I know that have taken some adversity in their life and have turned it into a strength. And they can and they're standing tall today. So I can appreciate that insight. So you're here. You started off in corporate, and I've had some experience in corporate and public services.
It's
Two different
different.
things,
It
right?
is.
So
It
you started in corporate. So then why the switch?
is. So I had left that job. I was fully vested. I have been with the company for many years, and it was just time for a change. So I just decided I had, by this time I had my daughter, and I had just moved to Broadview 2 years, 2 years prior to me having my daughter. And as she started getting older, like a toddler, I was like, well, what do they have for, toddlers? And they didn't have programs. And I was like, that may, even though we grew up poor, we had the YMCA and we didn't have to pay. Or if it was a fee, it was so minimum that, anybody could afford to pay. And I don't remember what the cost was, but I don't recall us paying for services to have recreational. And so I'm looking at what other communities are doing, like for me and mommy time or toddler time, or how you create friends. And I went to the park district and they didn't have anything for a small. The only thing that they had was they call it a tiny tot program, like a child care. And I was like, well, I don't really need a child care because at this time I wasn't working, but I needed something to give my daughter an outlet to where she can meet and I can meet other parents because I didn't have any friends here because I just got on a plane and left. So I didn't have any friends. So I had to build friends over the years. But when I saw that they didn't have anything, so I was like, well, I need to get more involved. And so I volunteered at the Park District. And when I volunteered, that gave me access to get inside to see what was going on. And when I got inside, I didn't like what I saw. The staff was talking to the children any kind of way. It was just a place where parents could, have some sense of care while they was at work that was safe, but it wasn't conducive. Like, no one helped the kids with their homework. They talked to the children any kind of way. I just didn't like that. So when I got inside, I started, just asking questions about, the board and what that looked like. And so I ran for the Park District Board of Commissioners. It was a one seat and it was five candidates in this race. I didn't even know how to do a campaign because we don't come from a political family. So I was talking to one of my friends that was a library trustee in another community, and he was like, this is what you got to do to get on the ballot. So he kind of helped me get the signatures. So I got a signature. I went over to Lindop School, collected my 20 signatures that I had. He said, get double the amount. So I got 40. And my punch number was 25. And I remember my sister and my stepbrothers and cousins, they all stood at the polling places in Broadview. And we was out there from 7 o'clock in the morning until the polls closed. I was the only candidate that did that. And I won with 47% of the vote. I had beat out the incumbent and had been in office for 13 years. And then I got on the board and I started seeing how they looked at policy and how you implement change and stuff like that. And it was something that when you don't pay attention to systems, people lose touch and they think they can do whatever they want. But I felt at that time that our children deserved better for a park district. They was real stagnant with we have a successful summer camp program and we have a successful after school program and we got a tiny tot program, but they had no other programs outside of that. And they were okay with that. And I wasn't.
I love that. So you came in on a mission.
I don't
And
know if it was a
you
mission,
came
but I had my own daughter and I know what I mean, if I'm paying taxes, I want to see. I want to do everything in my community that I live here. So I got to go to another community to pay for services when I live here and they should have programming that other community, because at that time they had, like, they call it the residential rate and the non-residential rate. So if you didn't live in certain communities, you had to pay the non-residential rate, when you could just have these programs here and we pay our residential rate and we able to pay for the services. Because Broadview is not, it's a community that's it's not like on the high level of income, but it's a community where people want the best for what their money can afford. Why can't we give that to people?
Absolutely.
And that's where I was at that time. Like, why can't I give that to the people that live here?
Well, it sounds like to me that that was a catalyst. I'm gonna add another word when I describe you now. I'm gonna describe you as a disruptor, you know, because here
Yeah, I've been known
we
to be that.
are. And sometimes rightfully so, right? Because, you know, like I said, I, you know, with the memories of growing up, there was pools and field trips, and there was all kinds of things. And so you're coming in some years later, obviously, you know, that was a long time for me, but saying, you know what, you know, I see what's happening in other communities. I am a parent in this community, and I want to have the same thing for my, and I absolutely love it. So I've added disruptor. So you started off in the Park District then. So that's, so it's explaining kind of why your pillars, I think we're getting into why your pillars of focus, we're seeing that come to fruition now. So this is great watching the trajectory of, you know, you getting into office. So you got in there and made some changes with the Park District.
Yeah, so we start looking at policy, because if you don't have rules in place, you can't implement it. You can't be good financial stewards if you don't have policy in place that reflect decisions that have to be made. And so we did all of that, and at the time, the park elected body wasn't going to, like, conferences, like, you know, in the profession, like parks and rec conferences, to learn more of the peers of what's taking place in parks and rec across not just the state of Illinois, but across the nation. So we started getting engaged and started doing that networking and seeing what we could do, because everything that they did was just within the 2.2-mile radius of Broadview. So it never left outside of the community. And they thought they had all of the answers to make us better, when no, you was holding us, you was restricting us from expanding to be the strongest. That's why I say we Broadview strong, because we are resilient folks in town. And if you look at the history of the village when it first got implemented in 1914, and we go through the years as, you know, an all-white community at one time, and then it started, you know, Black families start moving in on the north side, and you couldn't come to the south side, and the one Black family that moved to the south side of Roosevelt Road had to cross, or some burnings take place in the yard, you know, but they it was a mixed family. The mom was white, the dad was African American, the kids are biracial. And so that created havoc on the south side of Roosevelt. And then you had the indescribable things that was taking place within the police department because of the race. We had an all-white police department, and they kept the African Americans from coming to have access to what the community put in place, a swimming pool, tennis courts, you know, recreational, where people can enjoy and congregate and have a good time, socialize. That's what all community is about, is, you know, connecting people to people. But that was restricted because of the times that they were in that moment. And so as you look, as I went through the archives, when we started going through, like, then I resigned off the Park District Board, and I became executive director. So now I can go more in depth on operations, but helping the board create policy of what's best for the community at large. And so we started looking at, like, photographs from, like, 1960 or 1958 of, like, when the pool got initiated, and what that brought to the community. When you look at those photographs, and you're seeing at the time, women wasn't really working, they was the caretaker. So the dad was out, you know, making money, and the moms was at home. So what they do, they created networks of playtime with their children, with their neighbors and stuff, and they all met up at the pool. They used to have, like, big parades on Roosevelt Road, and I'm like, why did that leave? You had tennis courts. So they created a space for them. They created a space for them without the anticipation that they would have to embrace a change one day. And when that change came, they took white flight. And then the dynamic shifted, where you look at the leadership. When that white flight took place, white leadership didn't take flight with them. So it was brain, to me, I call it brainwashing, because we live here, we pay taxes here, we're owning homes here, we're raising our children here, but we don't have access because we got white leadership controlling the narrative. And so we just wanted to just, you know, reflect on what that looked like. And I'm very blessed that my grandparents, we talked about growing up in the South. My grandmother is from Arkansas. My grandfather is from New Orleans. And so we talked about the discrepancy and segregation and what that looked like for them and what that meant to them, even though now they're in a big city in California versus growing up in small rural towns in the South. And so that resonated with me on why I am who I am today unapologetically, because I've had stories from my great-grandmother that I was blessed to get to know her and hear their stories, my great-grandparents on both sides, and my grandfather, you know, my grandmother and my grandmother parents hearing their stories and how they go through these systems. And we're still in systems, but it's how we navigate through the system to make it, to embrace it. And then they just changed the terminology of terms to make people feel comfortable. But why should we always feel comfortable when we know we're uncomfortable because things are thrown at us that we have to embrace? And that's just, that's not who we are as a people. We are resilient people.
Definitely. And it's, I'm listening to you talk, and while you're talking, I'm traveling back in time to when I was younger, and I was on the South Side of, and there was this officer. Oh my goodness, we were all afraid of him. We are all scared of him. He was so mean, you know. And I always tell people, I believe he may have been one of the reasons that I got into public service, one of the reasons, but because I was not a fan of the officers, because he was so mean. And I can remember a time where my cousin, her mom did daycare, and one of the kids got out the gate, and we were out looking for the baby. It was one of the babies, and he was the only officer driving down the street, and we had to flag him down. And his response to us was not nice. And we were like, we need help, you know, when we can't find this baby. And he was like, what you want me to do about it, was basically his response. And we were like, you know, taken aback by that, because here we are, kids, you know, they teach you to flag them down and ask for help. And he was not inclined to help. And I, you know, he was, you know, there for a long time. And I will never forget that. Like, you know, and I always said, you know, I would be kinder, you know, for lack of a better word. And so that resonated. And there are a few things, and there are some older gentlemen that did try to integrate or into that department and didn't, and they said they didn't pass. And so I, you know, when you're talking about that, it's things that you kind of suppress, or you don't kind of just don't have at the forefront until you tell the story and you're like, oh, wow. You know?
Yeah, but it's a real story, because when I talk to residents that's been here 40 years and they tell me these stories of, you know, their experience. And for me, it's not a secret, like, where policing was many years ago. It's been recorded, documented, and all of those things, but we still can't negate from the fact that it did happen, maybe not to you, but it happened to someone. And so we have to honor that happening to someone part. That is a real life situation, and you can't just brush it up under the rug. And so you hear those stories. And then when I get, so let's fast forward to me getting elected and being in a culture where, you know, we do have African-Americans in the police department, but we didn't have none in leadership. None in leadership. None.
Up until you took office.
Yeah, I think they had, well, when I came here, it was none in leadership. And so, and they've had sergeants and that type of thing, but.
But in command ranks.
In command ranks, we had none in command ranks. And, you know, as you go through processes and you learn things about the culture and those types of things and how people can rank up and they get, you know, consideration points and stuff like that, you know, some people get locked out because of that. Because, you know, those that can make that decision got preference to give points to get them over where they need to be to rank up. And so it's just, you know, we still have some time, some way to go, but I can't say that we speak positive in Broadview. We talk about being diverse, whether it's whatever, you know, the ethnic background is, or sexual preferences of a person, or the sex of a person. We want to be mindful that, everybody have an opportunity to have gainful employment, to be treated fairly and equally here in the village of Broadview. And so that's the message that I want to display to all departments that work under my leadership, is that we don't have, we treat the human side of things, or how people would feel, how they think about things, how they process things, because we may not always process it that way. But I do say this, and I'm unapologetic about it, I'm Black first. That don't mean I don't see other cultures or anything like that, but I know my culture and I honor that. And I do it unapologetically, because guess what? Other cultures get to embrace who they are, but they always want us to take the back seat and have, well, why you got to be so Black power? Because I am. I was born that way. God gave it to me. I don't know why he put me in these situations and these circumstances, but I like to honor the culture of people, because if we honor the culture of people, then we truly understand processes and we can embrace that.
Got it. And I think that historically, folks that are unapologetic make change. And we've seen that time and time again. And so you come into a community and you want to create the change, and you want to make sure that stories are validated, okay, heard, and then create the change and the diversity. And I hear you say, both culturally, racially, people who are differently abled. I see you do a lot of work around that, and supporting organizations for that. I see how you welcome each and every resident to Broadview. And I think that is the need, is you bring them a bag, and you welcome them. One other, pillar that you have and that you've talked about on your site is local business, and that you wanted to have a community where businesses were flourishing. And I can remember a time where, right along like that 17th to 22nd corridor, it was minimal. It was be, we had Hildebrand. They're always going to be a staple. I remember the girls used to work in there when I was young, and everybody goes to get their trophies there. And but some places started to fall off, like the Como's Pizza, places like that. It started to be minimal, and it has been so refreshing to see those businesses come back and those storefronts come back. And you're doing ribbon cuttings, and you have law offices now. You have a place where you can do events that just opened. So you're welcoming businesses. I think you also have a grocer that just opened as well. Ethnic grocer,
No,
like a grocery
we
storefront.
have all these in the Target stores for groceries, so we're not food desert.
No, but I'm saying you opened up, there was an ethnic little small,
Oh, the Latino store.
was it?
So
Yeah, something recently.
we have Asa Luego, that's the name of it. And so
Okay.
they cater to like the Hispanic culture with Latin spices and those types of thing. And then we have another ethnic small grocer is an Asian that catered towards the Asian community. So we have a small Asian community in town. And so they're able to, sell the spices and goods that they need. And people come from all over to visit both stores because they cater to the culture of how they cook and process food.
Yes. Yeah, I
So the
love
typical
it.
things that you can find in those stores.
Well, and I like the fact that, you talk about the diversity and thing, but there really is a lot of, I can see the growth, and I can see it in the town. And that is something I think everybody is grateful for. Also, you host events at the park. You did a big Juneteenth event, and you host, so you talk to the community and everyone's coming there to be together, and you include your village services, your fire chief, and everyone. So everyone's coming together. I think there's they're getting to learn each other, they're getting to know one another. I think everybody knows where you stand. You talked about, I think another thing that's really made an impression on me is that you, when you first came in, your immediate priorities were instituting more economic development programs. And then one thing was you're getting your website up. And I think I told you when I first started to say, hey, I got the best information from the website. So I see what you say you're going to do, you actually do it. And sometimes that's not always the case. Someone might say, if I get in there, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And then you're like, well, what time are you going to do X, Y, and Z? And you not only said it, but you're like, I'm going to do this in 60 days. So that website, that was like, we getting it up. People, this is our first opportunity to tell about our village, to let everybody know where we stand and how we live and what things are available. And you got that done. And then fast forwarding, because we can talk about your path and we have, but I mean, I really like to highlight some of the things because we could be on forever and I know you're busy and it's Halloween. And so I don't want to hold you because I know you probably want to get out and about, but I saw some things recently and I would love for you to touch on because you're taking this small town, a small village. You're creating, I mean, there's so many things that go up. You have senior complex and you have the diverse stores that are coming up. You have all the business. You have made an imprint at the library, the park district, the local business. I see you visiting the schools, implementing programs, having your service-oriented village work teams go into the schools and also educate. So I see that. So you've met your four pillars. You're doing what you said you were going to do. And now it looks like earlier this year, there was this cross community collaboration. So this C4. So now you're taking this town and you are forging these alliances that you said you were going to forge. I think this is awesome. So you got to tell us about it, but you're in this C4. Tell us about what this C4 is, because again, it is affecting, communities get resources that may not have gotten them had there not been some voices. So what is C4?
So C4 is cross community climate collaboration, or cross climate community collaboration. And so myself, Kathy Aducci, the mayor of River Forest, and Vicky Skaman, the mayor of Oak Park, we kind of start having conversations on what that would look like. And so I work with a consultant, Darnell Johnson, with Urbancy Efficiency Group, who's in the private sector. And then we have on the nonprofit side, Seven Generations, that do a lot of the composting, solar paneling, those types of stuff as it relates to climate change. And how I got into, and I promise you, this was not on my radar. How I got into this space of work is because right after I got elected, I had a cousin that died at the age of 10 of asthma.
I'm sorry.
And I was like, no child should lose their life on something that we can manage. And it's all in air quality, whether it's in the home or it's in the community, the environment. So I met Darnell and we just started having conversations about different things. So he started talking about all this high level stuff that I just was not interested in, but it all made sense as you start putting pieces together. So he and I started doing a lot of work around it, started going to different events and just hearing about the environmental injustices in Black communities and how we can leverage and participate to make it wholesome for other communities. So I had a conversation with President Skaven and President Aducci, and we just kind of formed the C4, the three of us. So we are the three leaders on the project, but we have two consultants that work with us on that. And so now we have 14 communities that's a part of C4. And like a lot of the other municipal cogs that we all are participating on, what sets us different is we hold the hands of municipalities that don't have the resources, or they don't have sustainability coordinators or directors on their teams because of cost. And we help them get to the level where they need to be for their community. So they get to design a roadmap on what their community want, that's best practices. So for us in the village of Broadview, we looked at air quality. So we just had a tree assessment done of all of the trees that's in the village of Broadview, the trees that need to come down and how we replace them. So we have to include that in our budget so that we can stay true to our sustainability plan as we look at air quality, because the shade from trees, it helps us. The air quality in the trees and the environment, that helps us. We look at our water infrastructure, how we look at how we replace water mains and how we have best practices for how we have enhance our drinking water to make it affordable, because water is, it's a misconception that water should be free because it's a natural resource. And that part is true. It is a natural resource, but the reality of it is somebody got to process it so that it's safe for us to drink. And that's where the cost is driven up. And we don't educate people on that, on what that look like, because it has to be processed with chemicals so that it's safe for us to drink. Then we start looking at the solar paneling. So now we have residential. We are a part of an entity called SolSmart. And this is how you look at policy around solar energy. And so we are in a silver status. We missed the gold status by, I think, 30 points.
Wow.
But we still have opportunity to submit to be in compliance to get to the gold status. But we came in as a small community. We didn't come in at the bronze, which most communities come in at the bronze, because it's a lot of work. But when we got the final analysis, we ended up getting the silver designation. So we were real excited about that, how we look at ordinance, how we hold those that selling solar energy to our community, holding them accountable to what's conducive and what's best for our residents to participate in, and not just selling them a bunch of stuff to just because it's feasible and it could be economic, an economic engine that protect their finances. And then, so now we're looking at EV charging stations. And so I'm really excited about that, because as we looked at, so in the village, we don't wait for the county. We don't wait for the state. We don't wait for federal government to tell us when we gonna get some money. We budget for the things that we want, and we utilize our tax dollars to get all of the things that we need. We may not have the full cost invested, but we make the initial investment, whether it comes to designing and engineering, because you got to have that. So we want everything that we do, we are shovel ready for the receiving of all the blessings that God have bestowed to us. So we are prepared to go into these, big grant awards, because we've invested, 200,000, 300,000, but we budget and we plan for it. So, because that's the first initial step of being awarded anything. And so we got, in our industrial corridor, we have our business colleagues that, and they're using their own financial resources to replace roofs so that they can get solar paneling. Typically they wait, what can the village or what can the state do for us? They're not even waiting now. They're doing it on their own, because we've taken the approach that we are making investments in our own community so that we can be awarded these, and we're able to help them if we get awarded, because we can include them. Like this company, XYZ, invested in the roof. It cost them $1.3 million. They want to get solar paneling. How can we help them? That's help.
Yeah.
And then, we got one entity that they invested in EV charging stations. Now, we applied for EV charging stations, but in the interim, what we did was all of our newly municipalized that's on the Roosevelt Road corridor, we did the initial investment to make sure that we had the conduit and infrastructure in place to receive EV charging stations. So we got everything we need. The infrastructure is in place. Now we at the part of vetting out who we want to be our vendor to put this in place, and working to see, and just being patient to see if we get awarded to put these charging stations in our municipal lots. So it's just being proactive in how we look at environmental, and it's such a big thing with climate change and all of these things, and how you change the mindset of the average person. But I'm real big on holding community meetings to talk about these changes so people can, reduce the fear of having something new that may impact them financially in the future. So we get the buy-in and we have conversation with the residents, and we invite them, and then we encourage them to feed into us so that we can make better decisions. Just because I'm the mayor, I don't know it all. Just because we have an elected board of trustees, they don't know it all. And we rely on the community to give us that input, because a lot of them are professionals in whatever entity where they can give us their expert advice. They live here, so they're giving us their expert advice. And that's kind of how we work collaborative with our community to do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, and I've seen that too. And I wanted to mention that, and I'm glad you brought it up, is that you bring a lot of things to the community and have these discussions. And when you first started, you had a lot of discussions, and it didn't matter the topic, whether it was race or whatever, mm-hmm. it was a decision you were going to make. You wanted to get it out there. Like you said, you're a truth teller, and everybody tell their truth. And now we know, now let's move forward and let's figure it out. And I love that you're having the conversations about the environment, because and bringing the community in and kind of giving them, some inside information and letting them know the truth, because otherwise they're relying on TV and maybe some fear tactics and, this isn't real. It's real, and we know we
Yes.
care for our planet, right? And so so you're doing that. And then that it didn't stop there for you. And this will be the last thing I bring up, because otherwise I'll be talking about all your accomplishments all day, is that you recently were appointed to the National League of Cities Environment Panel. So was this kind of offshoot of this project, and was there some kind of recognition, and they see the work that you had done, and that's why, now you can be a voice on a larger platform?
So, through the National League of Cities, if you want to sit on an advocacy board, you have to apply for it, and they, I guess, your peers select you to be a part of. So, I don't really know how. I just applied for it, and I got selected. But I'm happy to be on that because it has opened so many opportunities on like policy, things that we should be considering, or things we should look at, or having a network of my colleagues from different states on how they implement different things, or what you want, like the landmines, what do you want to stay away from? And so, just being open on the policy and what that looked like and how they implement, and then just being a voice of a small community, the impact, because sometimes decisions are made, and because we're so small, they don't consider us.
Right.
And to me, I tell them all the time, that's a problem, because I always say the lowest paid employee got the best idea. Sometimes the smallest community have the best idea too. And you have to embrace that they may not be as large as a 50,000 resident or even a 200,000 residential. But I describe Broadview as we're 8,000 residents. Our industrial corridor, with all of the people that come through here every day, we get up to about 60,000 people. That's a real number.
That is.
That's a real number. When you look at the fire calls that we make, when you look at our police calls that we make, that's a real number. Because if we just service our community, we wouldn't need as many police officers. We wouldn't need as many fire EMS. We wouldn't need that because we can manage that. But when you start getting higher in your numbers, so that's why I said we're strong. We're strong because we recognize who we are. We recognize that. And
So
once you
you
recognize,
has
honor,
taken on the identity of has taken on, you're strong and you know who you are, and you've kind of like bolstered that identity for the village. We know who we are, we have a voice, we want to be heard. And now you have gotten into a point where you're putting Broadview on almost like a national platform. There's an example
We
here,
are.
template here. There you go. See.
We are. It's a good feeling. And just hearing the residents that's been here a long time, or people that grew up here, that's still connected, like you still connected because this is your childhood where you grew up at. But just hearing the stories from you all, it inspires me to say that although you may not live in the community, this is what you remember about the community. It's just the shift that took place in leadership to make it wholesome for everybody to enjoy.
Yes, I love it. I love it. And so we see that once again, you came in. We see where you started. We see where you got your desire to be a public servant. You see that when you see a need for change, you work towards it. And now we just see the town being elevated, getting resources, but not just receiving the resources. Now you're reaching out and you're helping other towns, and other towns are working together so that you can pool resources. And I absolutely love that. And so, I got a couple of end of discussion questions, but fun ones. We won't do any more work. I'm going to ask you just a couple of things so we can close out. What surprised you most about being mayor?
I think what surprised me most is that I had to take on positions that I didn't know I had to do. And that's like, I co-chair our water agency. I didn't know I had to do that. It wasn't even an option. But I've learned so much about water infrastructure. I've learned so much about how we look at employees in that space of work. It's mind-boggling that we don't talk to our children about career paths where they can have success and don't have to have a college degree. And that entity is that component to our community that we've had for many years that we didn't even know we had access to. So, you know, every year we do around Earth Day where we get the kids that's in fourth and fifth grade and we take them over to the water agency and we tell them about the salaries that the superintendent make. We tell them how much water operators make. We tell them these are real jobs. And we show them how water is processed.
Love it.
Yeah, we giving
they
them
just
another opportunity.
Right.
That's it. You just flush the toilet and turn the water on to cook or take a shower, whatever you got to do. But you don't understand the dynamics of it. And so they get the opportunity every year. These students get to go over to our water agency and tour that facility. And we feed them lunch. It ties into their core curriculum. So the teachers can, you know, educate them on the science behind it. So that's a big deal.
It is. I mean, and I wish, and that's another great point. You know, when we're younger, you know, and everybody's parents did their best, like, wish they would have pointed out some other options because everything was, you got to go and you got to go to school and you can't do the trade or, you know, they didn't push the trades. They didn't push some of the things that keep communities going, that keep life going. And now I love that there's a spotlight on that because those are the real, you know, hometown heroes a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So spotlighting that for kids young gives them more options as they grow up and they don't feel so bottled up because everybody can't fit in the same
right.
path. You know, people have to have a different path. What are some of your favorite organizations to support? So I know you're a public servant, but I also know you have some favorite organizations that do great work. What are those?
So some of my favorite organizations, and I support them. One would be Polished Pebbles. It's a girls mentoring group to teach young girls about entrepreneurship and everybody is a CEO. I just love the concept and what they stand for. The Best of Proviso Township. I support them 1,000% because when we talk about how we bring people together, they're in our township, they bring people together. They actually helped me this year with Tour de Proviso.
Which was excellent, by the way.
Thank you. Which is, you know, it's just showing how we look at tourism and how we bring people to a destination, which is within the communities that we live in. So I like that a lot. The Westchester Food Pantry, because we know that food insecurities is a real thing, and they do a really good job of hosting fundraisers or you know, getting out in the community and actually just asking us what they need to provide to put meals on tables for those that's less fortunate than us, and they don't have to rely on just, you know, when they fall short, whether it's they SNAP benefits, they may have run out of SNAP benefits until the next time to replenish. Or it could be a single parent that's, you know, living paycheck to paycheck that may need to get to the next paycheck, may need some food. They do that. That's the work that we should be doing is serving. And then finally is the Answer Inc. They do a lot of work around those with disabilities. And we always shine those off. Well, for a long time, we shine off those with disabilities because, you know, they go out in public. They're not like your typical kids. They may scream, cry, and people just don't understand the nature of what that parent goes through. So I really respect the work that they're doing because they give parents a break from time to time to be able to have some time for themselves. I mean, my daughter, through the grace of God, didn't have a disability, but she got on my nerves. You know, that's just a real thing.
Spoken like a true parent.
You know, but it's a real thing. And so just think, if you got a kid with a disability that always needs your attention.
Yes, yes.
And you don't get no breaks. The school is calling you, behaviors, da 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 da, and you get no breaks. So they do a really good job of making sure they have like the Saturday university where the kids can go out for a couple of hours so that parent can, you know, go shopping or even if they just want to sleep for another hour after they drop them off.
Yeah.
They get to do that. Or they provide horseback riding camp for a week where parents get a whole week to not worry about their child.
Yeah.
They're not worried about them because they're somewhere else, but they don't have to go through the day-to-day 24/7 emotional roller coaster that takes place a lot of times. So I like that a lot that they give the parent a break because I just know being a mother of a non disabled child, how that would make me feel if I
Right.
had to do it all the time.
You know,
They'd never get off.
right. And you know what? They love so hard because they have to advocate so hard. And so us with, you know, a typical child, we don't have to advocate as hard because it's the social norm. But these parents
Right.
tirelessly advocate and care for their children,
Yes.
and because they're doing so much. And yes, I agree, phenomenal organization. So those are great organizations. Hopefully our listeners will check them out and see that they are. And then finally for you are a highly visible public servant. I mean, you're everywhere. You know, just doing a lot of things, serving on a lot of boards, you know, giving a lot to the communities. How do you create balance and self-care for yourself? How do you do that?
It's real easy. I say no.
Okay. No is a requirement.
I do say no. When we before we got into the pandemic, I would go to the gym and just work out, sit in the steam room, that type of thing. But when we got into the pandemic, we couldn't go into the gym, so I created a self-care room. And I have an adult daughter. She no longer resides in the state of Illinois. And then I had my niece, my sister that passed. Her daughter stayed with us, but she moved on. So I took that room and made it a self-care room. So I got my bike in there. I got a relaxation chair. I have yoga mats in there, and I have all of my vision boards on my wall so that I'm always reminded when I'm cycling that I'm reminded of what the promises God gave me when I created that vision board. And I just really have self-reflection in that room. So it's a room that brings me peace. I got positive affirmations in there. Even when I get up in the morning and I turn on the light in my room, I got positive affirmations, even just to turn on the light switch to remind me that I'm walking out of my place of peace, but now I might be walking into chaotic because now my day starts because I'm walking out of my sanctuary of my own bedroom. So I've learned that just, having a therapist and being able to talk to someone. I have a really good friend that has a high profile job, and we it's just crazy because we'll just talk almost a couple of times out the week, and we don't talk like at 8 o'clock because our day's done started. We talk at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. We're both up, and they're like, "Well, let me tell you what happened to me yesterday," and da 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 da. So we kind of have that kind of the conversation, but that's a trusted source that I could be vulnerable with and share things with, and I know that it's going to stay right where it is, and vice versa for her. The only thing is, we don't allow people to see us in the same space at the same time together. So it's really a bond, a sisterhood of having high profile people. And she's not an elected official, but she's a high profile person that the public really relies on her attention a lot of the times. And we have this conversation often. Like sometimes I don't even feel like I don't even know who I could talk to.
Wow. It's hard.
So
It's hard because you don't know who
it
to trust, and
is.
you don't know intentions of people in your public face. And
It
I, you know, it is, I can believe that that's tough, you know,
So
trying to.
it's funny, sometimes when people see me post on social media, they think I'm with somebody else, but they don't know. So I'm the mystery.
Some things you got to keep to yourself, Mayor.
And we do, and we do a really good job of, vacationing together, hanging out, having fun, and just let people assume what they want to assume. And I like that they have the assumptions because I'm at peace with it all. I don't have to prove my work speaks for itself. So I'm good with that. And I'm here to do the work of the people.
I love that. And I don't see you stopping. I just see you continuing to keep going. And so, even though you hold some things close to the vest, I'd love to see or hear about what you're going to do next. Because I don't believe you're going to stop here. You know, I believe that you have a heart here. You're building community here. Bravi will always be here for you and with you. But it sounds like God spoke to you early in your life, and there are some things. So I cannot wait to see next steps. You are an educator, a planner, you have foresight, you're a disruptor. And you have spent your life supporting and sacrificing, but also you have learned the balance and that it is okay to keep some things just for you. And so I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I really appreciate it. And I hope that the listeners listen and enjoy it as well. Thank you for stopping by. Any last words for us, Mayor, before we sign off?
I would just, I always like to tell people, stay true to yourself and trust the process. And then everything else just fall into place.
Love
And that means something different to different folks. But for me, that's where I found the most rewards come out of that, when I trust, I'm true to myself. And then I start trusting the process. And then everything, it just falls how it falls. Every day is not a win. And you got to have some failures to have success, so I'm okay with that.
And we shouldn't give up. If we have a
That's
failure,
right.
we should just keep
Keep
going.
going. That's right.
I
So,
love that. Thank you so much, Mayor, for your
thank
time.
you. You're
And
welcome.
I'm sure I'll see you around. I love what you're doing. It makes my heart big and proud because
Oh,
I
thank
am from
you.
Broadview and I love to see the change that's happening there. So thank you again.
Well, I'm happy to make you proud of Broadview. So, it's a big deal, and that pleases me to hear, former residents that lived here that's moved to other communities to say that they can see the change and they happy to see the change that's taking place. So that really pleases me that something good is happening for the town.
It is. It definitely is.
So
So
yeah.
thank you. Yeah.